no such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do.
No, we don't.
A donkey is eating. A donkey needs a pellet. There's nothing else to eat.
He was massive. Legs, ass, spit. But I bust out laughing watching him.
There's only one place to start, Paddy. That is the incredible comeback from Limerick. And apologies to you for starting with this, but we have to. You're on the show on your own with me today, and you're going to have to suffer. There's no other way. Like, I mean, think about this. Like, I mean, they were dead and buried at half time. Like, I mean, they were 11 down in the first half, 10 down at half time. Like, this Tipperary tired in the second half. There's no doubt about that. But they tired like normal human being players. Limerick were superhuman in the second half. They didn't get tired. If anything, they became energised by the halftime team talk. They didn't look in any way tired. And they gave a second half performance that was pretty much beyond belief.
Yeah, it was kind of for the ages, I think, that performance. But I know you say dead and buried at halftime. I certainly didn't. No, and...
But that's normal. That's normal. You're from Tipperary, you're thinking the worst.
I don't think so. No, because I can remember 2019 All-Ireland final, 20 minutes ago, I said, this game is over. Like, you know, this team had Kilkenny and it was over. And I said, I brought my mother to the match yesterday and she said, three goals now, geez, we're going well. And I said, we'll need every one of them. Because that was, to me, Limerick in the first half were absolutely dead. Now, Tip were flying. So don't get me wrong. Tip were absolutely flying. But there was I'd say 40% or 50% Limerick were playing it, honestly, like, if it really, really what they were at. And when they upped the gears in the second half, Tippett put so much into the first half that they were able to blow them out of tackles, work them so hard. And it was, in a lot of ways, it was a reverse of the first half. Tip were able to break up Limerick's play in the first half, but when Limerick did it to Tip, it was devastating consequences. Now, Tip will always look back at a couple of things. I think that first goal could have really been avoided. Probably a poor option, and then we got turned over for the goal. And when Limerick, are playing that well and they're coming back at you like that, you certainly can't hand them scores. But they were full value for their win. They're absolutely awesome and really showed again another feather to their bow, that kind of a comeback.
We'll talk about that puck out in part two when we analyse the game, because it was that sharp puck out really was, you know, It was a killer blow, because the 3 points in a row turned into 1-3 and now it's back. Now I started thinking, I have to hold my hands up. I said to the father at halftime, I said, Limerick are going to be beaten here. Tip are flying it. They're absolutely all over them. And it's hard to turn around a flat performance. Even Henry Shefflin, now he said Tip would win handy. I thought that was getting carried away with themselves. I thought Limerick would have come back. But it has to be said, Paddy, the Galan red card, that was a big, huge talking point. Would Limerick have won that anyways, do you think? Like, I think everyone will agree that was a straight red card.
Yeah, sure. Look, as a Tipperary person, what I'd be saying first is Tip have a lot more, and I haven't heard much about the Glenn red card in Tip, because I think we're just concerned about our performance. But as an analyst, I'm saying obviously that was a red card. He flicked out, hit him on the knee, and looked like a nice slap this time. I know some people say Cahill goes down a bit easy, but that was obviously a nice smack at Hurley. So look, that was a straight red. Limerick. Why did I say Kilkenny? But Limerick were in the ascendancy. They were really, really strong. I still think it would have been a really difficult match for Tipperary. But that could have just given them space in their back line to ping the ball around and not be closed down as much as they were in that second half. And we were. Every time Tipperary came out with the ball, there was Limerick lads all over them. So look, that can change the match. But Tip got the decision against Clare. We got the penalty that, you know, people would agree that it wasn't. So it evens itself out. And even the Seamus Flanagan one, the game was over at that stage, nearly. But that was probably another one, really.
Yeah, no, that probably was. Galan did that against Cork a few years ago and got sent off for it. Nearly the exact same thing. I don't know, was he pissed off that he wasn't starting? Because there was no real need for it. Barrett wasn't really fouling him or doing too much. And I know Barrett might get inside your head off the ball and maybe that contributes into it. I don't know. But like, I mean, one thing that could have done, it could have demoralised Limerick, you know, their efforts at a comeback. Because I know they scored the first 2 points before that. I remember Tom Morrissey kind of celebrated one of his points. And like, then you're thinking, geez, it's a bit early to be celebrating now. Wait till you get to, you know, 4 or 5. But they were obviously riled up. That might have taken the wind out of their sails if they went down to 14 men.
Yeah, that's the words I was saying, wind out of sails. And it's like, you suppose, we talked about 2019, All-Ireland Barrett gets, or Hogan gets sent off. like people say, oh, Tip would have won that anyway. I don't, you know, always go for that. I think maybe on the day, the better team, fine. But it does completely change it. If there's only, if there's 8 points in it and you take a man out of it, yes, it is a completely different game. Then you have, hopefully, Limerick maybe running around chasing shadows. Like, in fairness, Tip looked like they had an extra amount of time in the first half. And in the second half, they may have made that count a bit more and they could have spread the play. And they should have been able to do it more with 15 men, but they didn't. But 14 would have helped. But still, look, at if I'm just saying, obviously, from a Tip point of view, I think you're looking a lot deeper than that, than just the red card incident. But
yeah.
I think Galan will have to be careful. I'd say it's probably a build-up of not playing, getting on, sort of maybe a couple of rough and tumbles with Barry Heffernan and as I said, Barrett. But, yeah, he'll have to watch that. And it is something that's in his play. And, look, if you take that out of him, you know, what else are you taking out?
Yeah, I think the reason Tip aren't making too much out of it is because they were completely, you know, annihilated, as they say, in the second half. And it would sound very, very stupid, you know, or, you know, sour grapes to be bringing it up. Kilkenny won their 73rd Leinster title. Brian Cody, 17th. Like, I mean, you know, geez, for me, the writing was on the wall when they went 4-0 up. Owen O'Donnell gone off. He shouldn't have started, Paddy, let's be honest. Like, I mean, the hamstring wasn't right. The very first ball, you could see him pulling up, wasn't it? The very first ball. And he must have stayed running around for another couple of minutes. And now you're, now he's gone off. You're wasting a sub. You know, hindsight is fair enough. But if it's not right, you can't really, you can't play.
Yeah, and I'm wondering what the thought process was behind it, because, you know, it was a tear to hamstring going off. Like, anyone looking at him pulling up in the Leinster semi-final,
yeah,
know, that was at least a grade one hamstring, which is maybe your least dangerous. But that still takes, to me, when I ever pull my hamstring, you're probably the same, 3 to 4 weeks
yeah,
to be right.
Yeah.
And you're going into a Leinster semi-final and you know TJ Reid or some other good player is going to be put on you to test it out. And of course, he's gone straight away. And okay, they did want to win the Leinster final, but I think when the other players were ruled out with COVID, I would have nearly cut my losses with Owen O'Donnell as well and said, if we had a full team, yes, we could try and win this Leinster final, and that's a massive year for Matty Kenny in Dublin. But without those COVID restricted players already, and Owen O'Donnell struggling, I would have nearly, you know, I would have left him off and said, hopefully we can get a good performance without him. But, I mean, to me, it's never going to work 2 weeks. I've never seen a hamstring from pulling to being completely right in the match come right.
Yeah, not when you come off the way he did, I suppose. Like, I mean, that's important. No. Jeez, you have to feel for Keane O'Callaghan and for Ronan Hayes. Like, I mean, Jesus Christ, they're close. Like, you, when I think about this, and you obviously have to be respectful of the COVID thing and people, you know, whose family members have lost lives. But the chances are these two fellas are perfectly healthy. Only they were a close contact of somebody who also might have been perfectly healthy, but it was a positive test. And they're missing a feckin' Leinster final over. Paddy, I'd be tearing my hair out. I wouldn't be, like, I would lose my mind. I don't know what I would do. But they missed the Leinster final, you know, and potentially not a butter on either the two of them.
Absolutely flying it, probably at home with the feet off, you know, looking at podcasts. But it is, and we're actually getting to a stage now of, when are we stopping declaring these types of things? When are we saying that close contacts aren't as dangerous as they were before and that we have to get on with life? I understand this is that middle ground now. And as a layman, it's very hard for us to say they should have been allowed play. And actually, they're only going out into a pitch anyway, so they probably wouldn't spread it. So it is a really difficult situation. But I just feel for them, because provincial finals, you get a few years out, and Dublin had some really good years, but they've also had some down years where they wouldn't get near a Leinster final. So they're massive days from. And look, I thought it was, you could see the way the game was going. Yes, Dublin fought really hard for a long time, but like Tipperary, they ran out of a lot of gas. They had to give everything to be in that match at stages and keep onto the coattails of Kilkenny. But without those players, and they're picked because they're probably the strongest, fastest, fittest and best hurlers. And without them, you're really, you know, you're going into the bottom, not in the bottom of the barrel, but, you know, you don't have a deep panel anyway. And now, you know, it's getting harder and harder.
Yeah, Ronan Hayes was a big loss because Hugh Lawler cleaned up the air in there, and he was going to be a big loss. Obviously, Keane O'Callaghan and Fergal Whiteley and Oisín O'Rourke, they were close contacts too, so they were gone out of the subs, you know. So it's just very disappointing. And especially the point is, you know, all these things it was always to protect the vulnerable and maybe their grandparents at home and things like that, and they're all vaccinated now. So I don't know. I don't want to go on it too, but I just feel terrible for them. No. Dublin don't get in Leinster finals too often, and for them to miss, you know, they could easily have played, but you know, obviously they had to follow the guidelines. Matty Kenny said after the game, our guys were very brave there. We asked them to be brave and drive on. They were very brave between the two injuries in the first half, and losing the six guys was a massive loss. You know, he says our guys did themselves proud. They did Dublin proud. We'll regroup. And I suppose all in the context of maybe the being hit so hard with the injuries and the COVID thing. Like, maybe sounded like Dublin almost were a beaten docket before the game. And, you know, because for me, they were well beaten in the game. The game wasn't a contest for the majority of the second half. And usually Matty wouldn't say he's proud of them, you know. I don't know. It feels like, geez, lads, you just stay close to Kilkenny today, and you know you've done yourself. You know, it feels like they were beaten before they went out, I suppose, is the point I'm trying to make.
Well, like, I was looking at it on television, and it popped up on the screen that said these guys were. I only saw it at the last minute that they were out, and I felt they were beaten before they went out. And I try not to be disrespectful, just honest of what I thought, because I feel Kilkenny are going well, and I said, geez, without these guys, you know. Keane O'Callaghan, to me, is a great, great man marker. And you're both ends of the field when you get the ball in there. You want to be safe. You want a ball winner and you want somebody to protect on the other end. And, then I said to myself, and Owen O'Donnell is starting. I said, this is a recipe for uncertainty. And I don't think you could be uncertain playing a Leinster final. If they had all, you know, all their top players playing, I think they would have said, yeah, we have a right shot of beating Kilkenny here. We've often performed well against them. And it was like the gods worked against them the other day, really, and a lot of what was going on. So, do you know what, Matty Kenny isn't too far wrong. I think he's being as honest as he can be. And I think that's going to prove to be a really troublesome Kilkenny team over this year and the following few years. And do you know what? He is right. It is very difficult when you have Hugh Lawler, very good fullback, but he's not up against the match that he's supposed to be against. And Mark Shute has been brilliant before for Coola and Dublin. But like over the last few years, between injuries and being involved with Dublin footballers, he hasn't really been exposed to much inter-county hurling.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, you're not putting like it like there.
He's not, but Shute hasn't been the same since he came back with them at all, to be honest. Like he hasn't been able to crack on to it. Brian Cody said after the match, we have a young team, a young panel, and there's obviously some top class experienced players in there as well, which there is. And Kilkenny now amazingly have a bench. Right, so Cody was never well known for bringing lads on. Like, I mean, that's the old school managers, me 15 and that's it. Like, he'd bring one or two on, maybe three. Now he's bringing on Michael Carey. What a speed merchant he is. I would advise Brian Cody to have a look at Kyle Hayes yesterday and maybe have a cheaper version in Michael Carey look, he's not a Kyle Hayes's, but for that speed coming from wing back, I mean, that's pointed away. If that's not the future of wing backs in hurling, if you have that kind of speed, maybe it is. You know, you have Killian Buckley, you have Walter Walsh, you have Alan Murphy, James Bergen, who played well when he came on. An impact off the bench now, Paddy.
Huge impact off the bench. But I suppose, look, you're saying for the last few years he hasn't used many subs, and I think that's because they hadn't been developed yet. But certainly back when we played, there was somebody coming in. Martin Comerford came in 2011 and probably made the difference, got a goal there when we were kind of on top and coming back. So plenty of times when they've been successful, they had a lot of people come on. Like TJ Reid was a sub in 2008 and came on and scored 5 or 6 points in the All-Ireland. So it is something he would have liked to have, but he's after development. That's what I admire about it. It's taken 2 or 3 years. I mean, how many people wanted to know Cody gone over the last few years? I suppose, look, I always maintained he was getting the most out of what he had. And I think they look back to what they are. They were a bit more new age, obviously. I'm not saying they were lumping every ball down. They were finding their stick passes. But they had a great mix of driving in long. And you know what? The old school, the men won't get out with the ball. The forwards tackling like backs. Yeah. And to be honest, they had honesty there. And they were all over the Dublin backs. Who just, you see them in the last 15, 20 minutes, they were gassed out. And that's a great sign of that Kilkenny team. And I think they have a right say in this All-Ireland.
You know the famous clip between Tyrone and Kerry of that ferocious Tyrone tackling that went from the whole... That clip went on for maybe a minute and a half. And, you know, everyone spoke about it and it did the rounds. That's Kilkenny for 75 minutes without stopping.
Yeah. Like it's that's honesty. And look, I've talked to people recently. I've started a little bit because I'm getting older to play in the forward line, and I'm seeing it from a different perspective. There's umpteen times, and you probably know, same in football in the forwards, umpteen times you can not make a run or not cover space or not support the man, and nobody will actually know in the stadium. Nobody will know at the match. The manager won't know. And I think that's the true sense of what honesty is and what a team is you make the run and you cut the space out and nobody will see, and it makes it just that bit easier for your team. And if I was to pinpoint one thing that Kilkenny get right, it's that. It's that there's that honesty that they're always getting back. And he has picked people who can move. I often say Tipperary maybe struggle with mobility around the field. He has guys on the field. You look at Martin Keown there. When he came on hurling first for Kilkenny a few years ago, he was extremely raw hurler, but he was able to move around the field. Billy Ryan was probably different. He was more of a hurler. Now you see him getting involved in the play, and he's as teak tough as any of them. And I think, you know, you'd look on the field there now, if they had any other jersey on, you'd still say it was a Brian Cody team.
Yeah, yeah, you'd identify it. So there was a brilliant game in Thurles on Saturday evening. Fantastic game. Clare obviously won. A Clare have a great record against Wexford, let's be honest. Should be 4-0, it's 3-1. You know, after the game then, it kind of turned into the Davy show. Like, I mean, we know Davy, and he had a bit of a run-in with Paul Galvin. Not a run-in, it was Paul Galvin responded back to it. Like, this is definitely contrived by Davy after losing a game. Like, he started talking about, he says, can I say to people, people have brothers and sisters, mams and dads, people that they actually care about them, and what people in the media and Clare have done is absolutely disgusting. What people in social media have done is disgusting. What one or two people, one or two clubs have done, instead of looking at themselves and how they can make their teams better, they've tried to pull us in a place we don't need to be. That's grand, but in general, the boys and girls trolled and getting online abuse, it's not good enough. And I would challenge the government to stand up and make these faceless people accountable. What the hell has that got to do with losing a match? Like, the boys and the girls getting trolled and calling on the government, that's all shite talk. That is trying to deflect away from the match. And that kind of stuff, it doesn't really have any business in post-match matches. Like, I mean, he's clearly doing that for a reason.
Well, I'd love to hear the question that was actually asked him, because, you know, was it a current affairs journalist was there asking him about it? Because I don't know how you get onto it. Look, I've often talked about Davy Fitz. I've been a player on the field while he's been on the sideline for plenty of years, and everyone has got it. You know, his own players have got it in a manner that's, you know, not encouraging, like that's like borderline abusive. Officials are getting it. I mean, we talked about up in Antrim recently. He's starting a row for no reason, and you know, he gets banned for a match. Opposition players get it. I've been involved in a college's match. We're going around for the parade, and he's roaring at our players in our parade that he managed at club level. So there's three incidents of him bullying straight away or attempting to bully. But it always goes back to boo-hoo to everyone else. And, you know, in his book as well. And look, I don't think family members should be abused and this and that. But, I mean, you know, we're the smallest violin. You know, that's you know, let's not say you're a saint yourself. I mean, and what I really dislike, what really, really annoys me, is it was said to him after the Antrim match, you know, and he said, look, that's the way I am. You know the way I am. That's the way I go on. Well, why is it okay for you to go on and expect everyone else to be virtuous? No, and also, the other thing I didn't like as well is just the people in Clare just stop questioning me and my family. Well, they have questions they want answered. A lot of people are asking them in respectful ways. I have no idea what's going on. But there are obviously people in Clare not happy with some of the things that are going on. I think everyone's entitled, if you're involved in committees, if you're involved in clubs, wherever you're involved in, you're entitled to be questioning what you're doing. And I think that's democracy, and that's the way everything should be run in a country. So, look, at pure deflection. You know, family members aside, you know, answer the questions about the team.
Well, that's it. Paul Galvin, anyway, says Davy Fitz loves to play the victim when it suits him. He's far from a victim in how he behaves behind the scenes when fronting to the media, and I can personally attest to that. Hope someone in the media has the guts to ask him hard questions now. Always the victim, never your fault, David. So, like, Galvin wasn't holding back, and, like, I mean, I think it was Eddie Brennan replied, "Never a truer word said." But I don't like that.
I was shocked.
Yeah,
I was shocked that they did.
Yeah, I don't like. I mean, the playing the victim thing annoys me. Like, I mean, I get more abuse online than anyone. Like, you don't come on crying about it. You just have to take it. Like, and even the Eddie Brennan interview that time, Christ Almighty, you were slated, but you don't come out crying and saying, "Oh, poor me, look at all the abuse I'm getting." You have to accept it, and that's like, you know, Davy's a divisive character, and his father's a little bit maybe you don't know his father that well to say he's a divisive character.
No.
But if you're in public life in Clare, that's part of the job. You know, it's part and parcel of it for managers, players. And abuse is wrong. online abuse. We know that. But public figures get it all the time. Like, I mean, crying about it, I don't know. I think, I definitely, there's no doubt in my mind he had that pre-planned. Because he often does it after matches anyways, Paddy. Whenever he loses, he talks about abuse that he's getting. Whenever he wins, he doesn't seem to talk about it at all.
I know. And look, come here. Frank Murphy got the same in Cork. You know, if we're just talking about his dad, I don't know anything about the man. He was getting questioned for years and had to get on with it.
Yeah.
So if you're going to take that public job where you're involved in a passionate business, like it's a passionate sport, and that's his business, unfortunately, if you're involved in it, people are going to want answers when things aren't going right, and it's publicly they're going to want. Like, so, you know, you could be involved in whatever private business you are, and it's in within a, you know, any corporation or whatever, and you're going to be questioned from the inside. But this is a public, the public are entitled to know where their money is going when they're, you know, supporting the teams. And sorry, that comes with the territory.
Yeah, I completely agree. Come here, Leash have redeemed themselves again. Like, I mean, this seems to be the case. There's some sort of mental block in the Leinster Championship for Leash in the last few years. They got hammered by Dublin, redeemed themselves against Clare in Nolan Park. Then they get hammered by Wexford even worse, and then beat Antrim, and then Jesus, could easily have beaten Waterford. You were watching this, Paddy. I'm delighted you were watching it because I was like, I watched the Sunday game this morning and I was watching it. I was really pissed off that they didn't show much of the game, which is fine. Now, Anthony Daly made a comment and saying, and Leash completely changed their game plan. And then Des moved on to some other game. I was like, what did they do? What will you tell me here? Like, so I'm trying to read match reports and see. And Cheddar did allude to it that they kind of went almost, Cheddar says, we've stripped it back to getting the simple and fundamental things right first. Getting those tactical parts and adjusting to those tactical parts, we need to do better. So, like, I mean, Cheddar saying he just stripped it back, I would have liked to have seen a little bit more. I know every county supporters has the same gripe with the Sunday game, but Jesus, give us a little bit more than that.
Well, I think especially when it wasn't shown on either Sky or whatever your issues are with that, a lot of people don't have the Sky Go, and it is finicky. You probably know yourself. I find it annoying watching matches on a laptop and hooking it up to the telly and what have you. So people just aren't going to watch it as much. And so it would have been a great one. And it's a very good story, the fact that Leash are putting it up to Waterford, All-Ireland finalists last year. And Waterford have a lot of motivation as well. So it's not like Waterford are coming sleepwalking into this. And I suppose, look, before anything else, I have to apologise and say I was looking at Leash during the league and I could only say what I saw, and that they were going terribly and really didn't know what they were at. But look, I looked at it yesterday. They were equal physically and the way they hurled. And if I was looking at it, I just think they played it really simple. Like how I like hurling, or maybe a lot of people like hurling to be played, you get in under the breaks, you beat your tackle, you hand it on, handed on to a free man, and he pops it into the forward line. And look, they played really, really well. They were very, very hard to break down. I think Paddy Purcell coming back into form, though, for me, like he is so elusive when he's playing well. When he's reading it, and the same thing happened against Antrim, the same type of goal, onto the break. And hurling is different like that. When you don't think and you're just coming onto these breaks, it seems to happen over and over and over. And he got 3 goals in the last 2 games with nearly the same sort of stuff. But he's a top-tier player, really, to be fair to him. And they were unlucky the other day. They got things going, the water break. And maybe, for once for the underdog, the water break came at the wrong time when they scored the goal.
Well, that was it. So, like, I mean, they went ahead at that water break. With 10 minutes to go, they were ahead. Unbelievably, you know, they were trailing. And like Cheddar said afterwards, we could have won the game. I'm not interested in moral victories. I think there was 5 in it at the end, but that was a last minute goal. I'm interested in finding out how we're going to improve ourselves against these teams, learning and developing and turning over some of these teams. Like, the reality is, like, and I'm the same with Gaelic football. Football hurling gone tactical and a lot of dropping off and leaving men free. Stop leaving men free. Like Tipperary showed and Cork showed against Limerick. Stop leaving their men free. They won't score as much. And Tip might have run out of steam. But if you mark the opposition's men and you leave enough forwards up when you have the ball, like, you know, you're onto a kind of a fairly logical starting point there straight away, Paddy.
Yeah, I think there's a better balance that teams are looking to get. I think sometimes when you play a Limerick, it's hard to know what to do, and I get that. I do get that. It's like, okay, if we step up on them, they're quite strong. Like, I saw Dan McCormack hanging out of Keane Lynch all day. I was at it, and he was doing great for a long time, or at least breaking even. But then when the tiredness set in, these lads just got going, and they opened you up. So I can see it at that point. But against most other teams, I don't see this infatuation with cutting off the space. I mean, what happened to actually marking somebody tight?
Yeah.
And that's that's what I, you know, I admire some of the teams like Kilkenny, in fairness. And even, you know, Limerick were open at times in the first half yesterday. But the goals were got off breaks of the ball. But any ball that came into Callanan, any ball that came into Jake Morris, they were getting really hounded out to the sideline. And I think, you know, if I was looking at, sometimes I look at underage tip players and I think they're not coached to actually be negative, you know, as a backman. And that's a real skill that needs to be harnessed, is to say, well, if you're getting to the ball, I'm going to be very, very tight to you. I'm actually trying to pull you back. And I think Barrett has it, obviously, has the pace. And he played as a cornerback as a youngster. But if I was looking at a lot of people, they're not coached with it. They're not coached to cut off the angles, to come across where the ball wants to come in, to know where the space to come out and block off from the corner forward or the full forward. And it is a gap I see. But certainly most teams, I don't think they need as much tactical. Maybe there's too many coaches.
Yeah, maybe there's too many free men, and that was definitely the case with Laois and Wexford and Nolan Park. They're dropping all off them, and that's Grant cutting down space. And sure, this is a game of hurling where you can score from the feckin' far 45-metre line. Sure. It doesn't make sense. It makes sense in Gaelic football. It doesn't really make sense in hurling. I think Cheddar might have, you know, realised that, and the Laois performances have improved an awful lot since then. Before we get into the Munster final analysis, Paddy, Westmeath won the Joe McDonagh Cup. Delighted for them. At last. Now, you said it, delighted for them, but now Kerry have lost two, you know, in a row. So you're kind of rooting for them now to get out of it next year. Three great goals in it. The Niall Mitchell catching goal at the start. Like, that's out of very top drawer from a puck out. And the camera angle for the Kieran Doyle goal. Like, he stuck that within an inch of the inside of the post.
Postage stamp, absolutely. And there were two kind of similar. I suppose I was looking at him like a defender. Like, they were unbelievable finishes. But I said, the same ball twice, ricochets the same, or catch the same direction, and no covering behind from Kerry. But then we're going back to maybe hanging too many men back. But I think sometimes, if we're talking about the level just below Liam McCarthy, that's a lot of the time when a player, you know, a backman has the judgment to say, I actually have to leave my man now and go back and save that area. I'm wing back. I need to run away from my man and get back in and save the 21-yard box. And I think, you know, when I grew up, that's the way I thought. You mark your man, but at all costs, you have to protect the goal. And I think getting a swing of a hurley that easy inside is just, you know, Liam McCarthy teams would eat that up.
Right. The Kerry goal was brilliant too. It was a lovely kind of, Shane Conway kind of pretended he was going to shoot and then gave a lovely kind of disguised pass. And then they were kind of opened up, a lovely pass into Mickey Boyle and a brilliant goal. He scored 1-3. I remember criticising him last year against Antrim that he didn't look in shape. I tell you, he's done some fair old work, you know, in the last year. Excellent yesterday, and looked a real threat. And you know, he did look in much better shape without going on too much about it than he was last year.
Well, he did, and actually, I read just by chance, I was reading a couple of interviews before matches, and he did say that he had felt the pressure after getting a bit of criticism. But he said he did go out and got into better shape, which I don't know which is it good to hear it or bad to hear it? I don't know. But he obviously made a big effort. But it is difficult. He was saying he played over a decade for Kerry, and you know, it's probably difficult to keep that motivation, to keep in shape around COVID times. Is it ever going to come around the corner that we hurl again? So look, at fair play at him for getting back this year, and obviously really, really talented hurler.
It was more of an orthodox year this year, you're right. You know, the last year came after lockdowns and then came after not knowing what's going on, and then a winter championship. So I suppose it was complete. He's a hero in Kerry, because I criticised him. I didn't think what I said was too much. Jesus, the pushback I got off it from Kerry hurling people. He's a legend down in Kerry hurling. Like, when I wouldn't mind, we complimented him a lot of the time. He had brilliant wrists, and JJ was, and Ken McGrath were very complimentary. But I took it big time because he's such a legend and he's been around so long for Kerry. So I was delighted to see him score 1-3 yesterday. All right, we'll leave it there and we'll come back in part two and we'll look at the Munster final. Okay, so Tipperary 3-21, Limerick 2-29. So, like, I mean, it was a very convincing win in the end. Tipperary got a consolation goal, you know, to put a little bit of respectability on it. But let's focus on the first half first, and then a game of two halves. like the old question my friends always laugh at me with, you know, the analysis, were Tip that good in the first half, or were Limerick that bad? And, you know, and the other way around. I think it was just Tip were that good. I know Limerick were a little bit off it. They had their tactics perfect. Dan McCormack back on Keane Lynch. Like you said, they had a savage battle. I think Keane Lynch started well first 10 minutes. Tip took over. Keane Lynch kind of went out of it, but Lynch cleaned Dan, to be fair, in the second half. you'd have to say. Tip dropping Brendan Maher off, Dan McCormack, Martin Keenidge, a little bit like Cork, we speculated, would they do that? Matched up against Limerick all over the field, you'd Brendan Maher free and you'd Declan Hannan kind of free, and that was kind of it. But Limerick or Tipperary weren't letting any wing forwards free, you know, none of the short ball, and geez, they were well able for Limerick, you know, in that battle.
They were well able from, and I suppose Tip as well got a nice start. They got the goal off the break and a couple of goals off breaks. The only thing I felt was that first half, we did get nice purchase off the long puckouts.
Yeah.
And I often say to you, I think if you rely too much on long puckouts, eventually, you know, it'll come back and the other team will get a run at it. So I think Liam alluded to that after the match as well. But the first half, Tip worked so hard. You know, they were all over the place. They kept a great structure in the back line, and their midfield and their forward line really worked hard. And I don't think we've ever seen Limerick, in the last few years be turned over as much as they were. They were kind of sometimes running out of ideas because what they rely on is the opposition to come to them hard and try and turn them over. They'll break the tackle and they're brilliant to lay off a pass then. And that wasn't happening. Tip were sort of standing off a little bit, attacking them then when they need to. So, and I thought they played it really to perfection. But look, I do still think, you know, Limerick weren't at it in the first half.
But they weren't allowed.
They didn't break any tackles.
They weren't allowed to be at it, though.
They weren't, but I think that's because their aggression wasn't there either. I do think Tip played really well. This is as good as a lot Tip team has played. But I don't think Limerick met that fire with fire. Like, Tip were winning all the battles.
Right.
Like, most of the battles. And even the high balls were breaking, like, let's be honest, Limerick only had their best team on the field after 30 minutes. You know, when both Dan Morrissey and Galan came on the field. And people talk about Galan not playing, starting the match. My big thing was, how is Morrissey starting full back with Shane McCallum full forward? And we saw, not that Richie English was cleaned or any of that stuff, but the physical presence of Morrissey. You saw two balls break down and Tip get through for goals. Didn't see it in the second half. And when all those long balls were coming out, there was none of this leakage of balls leaking down, being touched down, Tip guys taking it, putting it on the bar. The structure was right. The ball was going constantly long. And when it did, there was a sea. There was a kind of a wall, a semicircle of Limerick guys coming in to clean up that break. And look at the first half, Tip did well. Like Jason Ford, you know the Tip forwards can do this. When the ball is popped in space, they're going to do this every day of the week. But when it was tightened up in the second half, you know, unfortunately, Tip couldn't turn that around.
Was there a win there, or how was Barry Hogan able to land the puck out so long? I know he played the odd 1-2 with a corner back to get a little bit more space. It was a very obvious tactic. And I think it was because Callan and Rich English, Dan Morrissey, maybe wasn't playing, and surely he has to be playing the next day. But that was a very obvious tactic. They're landing that there. Now, you're right, there is an element of luck of Tipperary won the break on it. But they were showing, I think, on the game after, how Callan came out for both of them. And now there's nobody behind Callan, and English followed him into the break, which probably isn't the best fullback defending. There's enough lads around that break. Would you be better off standing on the edge of the box and making sure that whoever wins that break doesn't burst? It's just, it happened twice the exact same way, and Callan came out for both of them, and English, I think English the first time and Finn the second time, both followed him into that breaking ball, leaving the whole gaping hole there.
And it did, and it was, and I suppose it was Jake Morris was under one of the high balls anyway, and another time he broke onto it. But to me, you know, following out is one thing, but if you're not the man under the ball, you have to be cutting off what's around it. Like, you can't, if I'm playing cornerback, I can't let the corner forward run onto that ball. And that's what I mean about negative defending. Break the ball down, and if a Tip guy gets it, make him get it where he's not running onto it. And twice, two Tip guys running through in a row, Bubbles and
Morris,
and Jake. And yeah, and they stuck it away. Like, they're going to stick it away, but nothing like that happened in the second half. Not one break like that happened. And they learned it at half time. But to me, that, if you're talking about Limerick were Tip brilliant and Limerick sloppy, Tip were great to get onto the break. But Limerick can look at that again and say, lads, we can't let guys run unopposed through off breaking ball and have such wide gaps. And I think if you were to say God, how were Limerick bad in the first half? That's the sort of sloppy stuff that, you know, they shouldn't be doing.
Right. Because, like, I mean, John Kiely said after the game that there wasn't much, a little bit of structure change, he said, but they stretched us, or he said, just physically engage in the game. Was what they did in the second half. And, like, I mean, it's very old school analysis. It's just they got bloody stuck in. Now, I think Keane Lynch went wing forward and Hegarty went in centre forward. Maybe that was the only change that you saw. Or what structure is he talking about? Maybe Dan Morrissey coming up and structurally tightening up those long puck outs or something. I'm not sure.
Yeah, they stepped up a little bit. But I think he's not far off in saying they engaged physically more. They were way more alert. Like, I was on the side of Dermot Byrne in the second half, and he was stalking Noel McGrath on the wing. So he had one head looking at him, but he was going to attack a ball if it was out in front of him as well. And all the 15 were more like that. You saw Tipperary to work out balls in the first half, and Limerick were just off it, that small bit. And I often say in hurling, if you're just off it, you could be hammered, because it means that ball is just getting popped away. But the second half, like, we know Limerick are very strong in the tackle. Tip lads were not getting that ball off, and they were playing on the edge. You know, I'd say they didn't mind if they conceded a free or two, but they weren't letting Tip lads run out and pop balls over their head. Now, I do think Tip were obviously a little bit naive. Liam would have alluded after the match, and they could have learned from Cork a little bit. Them sharp puck out second half, you're getting closed down. There'd be nothing wrong with going back to Barry Hogan and him hitting the other sideline again and make him chase shadows a little bit. But when we talk about, you know, when you're on the pitch, that's a very, very hard thing to do when this avalanche comes at you. But it's lesson learned, but I don't know, is it too late, you know, to learn these lessons? I think, you know, you needed to have these plan Bs going as match went on. But as well, I suppose second half, if I was Tip, you know, the shot, we were either going short to the full back line or really, really long, and there was nothing in between.
Right.
I think Barry Hogan tried to hit, I think it was Noel at one stage, hit it out over his head, more tension back in the team again. And I think, you know, they got a little bit, you know, jittery in the second half, and it was very predictable, and Limerick were all over it straight away.
I can kind of see why he went for the short one. So Limerick get 3 points in a row in the second half, at the start of the second half, and I'm sure he just wanted to regain possession and maybe not hit another 50-50 down there. But geez, it's so dangerous, Paddy, because 3 goals now has turned into 1-3, and 10 points has turned into 4. When that goal went in, I thought Tip were in big trouble now, whereas at half time I thought, you know, Limerick, I thought Tip would win the game then. You know, there's no point in saying in hindsight, well, you know, you were right at half time, maybe thinking, but I think when that goal went in, now Tipperary in big trouble. I think that short puck out, and it's not hindsight, it's too dangerous. 3 in a row for Limerick. You know, those short puck outs, you lose them and it's a goal. Like, we've seen this before.
I can see what you're saying, and get it up there and eventually win one maybe, or make a cluster of people and try and make it into a dogfight up there. I can see that. But if I looked at that as an isolated incident, I think it was ball, it came out to Brendan. Like, Noel McGrath was free. I mean, now nobody on him on the sideline, 20 yards away. And Brendan, I suppose, does what he often did before, which was dummy out to Noel, take it back into middle, gets tackled, gets slipped, turnover. A goal, and I just think it was probably, you know, if you look back at it, he'd probably make that decision to get it to Noel, and we'll try and work a ball down the field. So, look, I think it was a safe enough sharp puck out to give. You're giving it to Brendan Maher.
True, yeah.
Great ball handler himself. And I don't think it was the worst option. I just think on the day, looking back, and I would say, we probably did the thing you don't do against Limerick, which is turn into two of their lads tackling you without much support. Like, Brendan probably hadn't much support. And I'd say, if you look back and he'd probably say, yeah, I'd love to have it back again. I'd let it out to Noel, and Noel McGrath would be good to pick a man out, or certainly put it into a good area, maybe really put them deep in their own 21. And yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, I was nervous after I was nervous at half time. 2 points went over. This was a different Limerick team. I said, oh God, we can't concede a goal here. And when that goal went in, to me, it was nearly curtains at that stage.
Yeah, it was nearly curtains. And then, like, I mean, you have the Kyle Hayes goal. They had the lead wiped out. They had 2 points ahead by the second water break, which is just phenomenal stuff. Like, the Kyle Hayes goal, like, I mean, this just from another planet, this goal, because he's getting the ball on his own 45. And, like, I mean, he steps inside Brendan Maher. Brendan didn't make the greatest attempt to, it was a tired attempt to run across at him. He just stepped inside him. He whacked it off the ground twice. I don't think he'd be I think he did that showing off. I don't think he needed to he did it before he had caught it twice. Anyways, maybe I'm overthinking that, but he did it twice. I don't think he necessarily needed it because he had it on the hurley for a long time. I don't think he even caught it before he had tapped it on the ground. And then Dan McCormack couldn't catch him, and then there's another little jink and a goal. Like, I've never seen a goal like that in hurling. And like, I mean, to carry the ball like that, maybe DJ Carey from around the midfield might have done something like it, but this lad's a phenomenon. He's playing wing back like a Gaelic football wing back, and I told you before there's lots of similarities with Limerick and their tactics in Gaelic football, but he's playing that like a Jack McCaffrey, like a Gavin White from Kerry, where he's just blinding pace from wing back. He goes with the ball or without the ball, and he's equally dangerous when he's gone. He's nearly more dangerous without the ball because he's coming on a pass. It's just, this lad's a huge weapon, and we're always wondering what were they thinking. He was such a good centre forward playing him wing back. Like, I mean, the answer is very obvious now.
The answer is very obvious because he was a natural half back as an under 21. Yeah. Then he comes in as a centre forward. He's an unbelievable centre forward, maybe the best centre forward in Ireland. So he goes back, he uses the skills he learned in the forward line to devastating effect. Now he's in the back line. To be honest, I think he's the best player in the country now. I said TJ Reid for the last few years, I think this lad is the best all-around player in the country. He can do absolutely everything. Like that goal, if my under-13s were doing that stuff in training, I'd say, hey, pack it in. Man, stop that mess, and you're never going to use it in a match. But he's changing the game.
Yeah,
he's completely changing the game. As a wing, like Tip were set up for that in the first half. He went on two or three runs in the first half, and Tip knew about it. They knew the danger. Mikey Breen, in fairness to him, followed him. Didn't always catch him, but he knew he was on his back, yeah. So he couldn't do the real damage. Shamey ran from the full forward line at one stage, lung buster in the first half, and fouled him, but stopped him up. But that ball, like, he got that deep in his own half, and Tip obviously tired at the time, but he just took off. Dan McCormack, fair play to him for staying with him as long as he did. Brendan, obviously, I think maybe that was a time to really send a message and stop him.
Hit him.
Up, foul or fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, and but then he smacks it off the ground. The second time, you're right, first time he didn't need to smack it off the ground. Second time he was just taking the piss and he goes through with the ball. And even, do you know the finish that they didn't really show? His hurley was upside down. He didn't even, it was a bat. It was a 20-yard bat on the side. It was a bat. Look, go back and look. He didn't even swing his wrist. He turned it up and batted the ball from 20 yards and got that much power. He's a sick animal of a freak. He's absolutely unbelievable. He's 22 or 3 years of age. I don't know what people are going to do with
him. He's unreal. And the gas thing, if Brendan Marr came across to take him out, he probably would have ended up with his head stuck in the ground anyways, because he'd bounce off his. He's so big. So, like, I mean, there's no real way to stop him when he gets ahead of him. What'll happen, Kyle Hayes, is in the next 2 or 3 years, you're going to be looking at wing backs playing wing forward to try and mark him. It'll be like, Limerick are playing with 7 forwards, and the other team, you're just going to have to, and you're going to have to turn and watch him. Turn and watch him, because this is too dangerous, Paddy. Like, he's making too many impacts. The goal against Cork finished the game just before halftime. That goal finished the game. They're both similar, bombarding forward. The Cork one was without the ball. This one was with the ball. And it wasn't the only time you did it against Tip. You're going to have to play a defender on him.
You are, but it's still a systematic thing, though. I think you can play anywhere, because Mikey Breen is probably Tip's pound-for-pound most powerful athlete.
Yeah.
And he was playing over there, and he was barely keeping it into him at times. Dan McCormack is well able to move, barely keeping it into him going back there. And it's not like he takes on his man, goes one-on-one. They're waiting for the overload on one side. And you can hear the crowd when Hannon is about to switch it over to him. It's like, you know, the crowd are getting up off their feet. It's like when Messi gets the ball. It's up off the feet and they're waiting to see what is this lad going to do with it. So I don't know. It doesn't matter who you're sticking it, because he waits until he gets a little gap. And then, I don't know, can you catch him?
Yeah, he just takes off. Like, I mean, how much will this hurt Tipperary? Like Liam Sheedy said after the game, you know, they died with their boots on. They're not Munster and All-Ireland champions for no reason. Like, he was fairly fair after the game. No excuses. He said, we lost our structure and our shape. Our distribution in the second half fell to pieces. They just put major pressure on us and we can have no complaints. They annihilated us in the second half. Saw Liam Sheedy going in at half time and he's encouraging them all walking off the field and they're up for it. And they're like, we have these now. You know, well, maybe not saying they have these now. Like, would that be harder for them to take than, you know, last year getting hammered, for example? Like, you know, to have them and then have it, you know, be really hammered in the second half. Do you know, like, I'm wondering how Tipperary will deal with this mentally.
Yeah, I think it is. Look, it is very, very hard. And you can say, look, that third sorry, the third quarter, we can say, look, the damage was done there, but I suppose that's where Limerick, I suppose I would say, lifted it to an All-Ireland final level of intensity. You know, they really pushed it, and we just tipped, just didn't have an answer for them at that stage. And that, to me, that's what really hurts. That's what really, really hurts. And in terms of losing your structure, I think that starts to happen when you're plugging holes everywhere, that nobody is winning their battles and you're losing scores. And, you know, you could be, you're playing midfield and you're saying to yourself, well, maybe I need to get down after the break here, and you're winning nothing around the field. You're not winning 50-50s, and everything seems to be working against us. So I think that really, you know, looking at a lot of defeats Tip have had, that'll hurt an awful lot because they put so much into the first half. But I did look, I looked with 5 minutes to go in the first half, and I could see a couple of Tip lads, you know, hands on the head, blowing hard because they were putting so much into it. And, yeah, you know, Limerick were, and it got them a 10-point lead, you know, got them a 10-point lead, but I think it left them with seriously nothing much in the second half in the tank. And, you know, I was talking to somebody today and I said it was like if you had a middleweight boxer against a heavyweight, and they both had the same skill, but the middleweight was, every time he hit, he had to hit harder. Yeah. Every time they locked up, he had to use more energy. And to me, that's kind of, you know, that'd be the metaphor I'd use for
it. It just kind of wore them down. I was saying that last Thursday, like, would they have the fitness to be able to keep that level of intensity up the whole game? And the answer was probably not. Like Limerick, the age profile, your heavyweight boxer versus middleweight analogy, all those things. It, like, I mean, it's hard to see how Tipperary can ever beat Limerick if that's the way, unless they completely start restructuring their team now and start doing what Kilkenny did and start bringing in some young lads with more legs. And, you know, that's just the reality of it.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, one good thing Liam would have got out of the game was the fact that he brought in substitutes. And even actually, I thought Jake Morris from start to end, while maybe the middle part was a little rough, he played pretty well and showed a bit more leadership than I had seen out of him. So there's a massive plus because we need young players. Mark Yeo came on, I thought he was really busy, and so was Niall O'Meara. So I think now that gives, Cadell even was good, and Brian Morgan. So I think all the subs actually made a bit of an impact, even though you might say the game was nearly over at that stage. But at least it says to Liam Sheedy now, going into the next match, okay, I still love my older players, the experienced, great players, but a couple can be maybe left off to come on and be fresh as daisies coming in. And I get to see a bit more of that now that they have, youngsters have shown a little bit of metal and a little bit of work. So I think that would definitely be worth looking at. But certainly I wouldn't panic, overly panic. At the end of the day, the Munster Championship is over, the Leinster Championship is over. Yes, mentally that's a hard one, I think a really hard one to take. But they have to build it up again. And I'd look forward to see what they do. You know, I'd expect maybe Mark Yeo to start the next day, Niall O'Meara to start. I'd like to see Paddy Cadell start. Maybe three changes and to see, can we get that energy into it? And then maybe bring on a couple of more experienced lads when they have a lot of energy and maybe the other team are a little more tired.
Yeah, yeah, that would make sense. Are Limerick built up an aura about them now? Like, they have an aura, but now they have a we're never beaten aura. Because, like, I mean, 3 years ago when they won the All-Ireland, they came back from the dead against Cork. They were gone in that game and it went to extra time. Then the following year, they were dead and buried against Kilkenny, got it all the way back. And look, if it wasn't for the wrong call on a 65, you would say there was only going to be one winner in that in the extra time. And then they come back from the dead. Yeah, like, I mean, if they get to the stage now, Paddy, where if a team's 10 points up and the team 10 points up gets nervous rather than the other way around.
Well, I think that would be it. And, you know, Dublin would probably be similar if any team could get ahead of them in the football. Yeah. Kilkenny were very similar. If you look at New Zealand, they'd be very similar. If you were beating New Zealand by 30 points, you don't think you'd have the game on. And I think it is that what they've achieved over the last few years and the manner in which they've played. And we often say they play to what they need to play. Certainly last year until the All-Ireland, they kind of played to that level that they needed to win matches. And yesterday, they underperformed. They were down by 10 points, so they knew they needed to raise it to a new level, and they were able to do it. And I think that just shows they were kind of showing their real ability yesterday. I think when they're at 100%, when they're in danger of losing, they showed their ability. And look, they're going to have teams nervous no matter where you are and whatnot. You'll have to beat them for 70 minutes, and that's just going to be a really hard task.
Yeah, no, it definitely will. Right, we'll come back and we'll do performance of the weekend. Okay, so for the first nomination for performance of the weekend has to go to Keane Lynch. He got the man of the match. He only scored a point, Paddy, but this wasn't a scoring performance. This wasn't a flicks and I look great performance. This was getting down and dirty and winning ball and being a leader and being a hardy bit of stuff and being all those things that you want out of, you know, one of your best players. Like, almost the most of all the unbelievable things he's done on the pitch, you'd almost say as a man, you know, that was a real manly performance out of him. And like, I'm not saying that other performances weren't, but other performances we rave about his skill levels, where yesterday we're raving about, Jesus, there's a good bit in that lad.
Well, that's it. And I think, you know, he is, you know, a skill-first player because he's so skillful. He troubles a lot of teams with just his ability, his technique. But yesterday, like, you know, I know obviously Dan McCormack very well, and training with him, he is by far one of the strongest players I've ever played against, Dan McCormack, or marked in training, or marked anywhere on a pitch. And doesn't look as strong as he actually is, like Paddy Maher's style strength, like really, yeah, really strong. And Keane Lynch won some great balls off him yesterday. Like, you know, now Dan did his own work, but by the end of it, Keane Lynch had probably worn him down a little bit. And even in the air, I mean, Keane Lynch isn't that tall, you know, he's a regular height fella. But just his technique and his strength to hold off the man was absolutely fantastic. And Tip hit him with shoulders and hopped off him, and, you know, he kept coming. And I think it probably, for a lot of Limerick players yesterday, it was nearly one of their greatest moments to be able to just take that and the physical pressure and come forward. So, no, brilliant, brilliant performance, and he seems to be getting better and better as well.
Yeah, no, he definitely is. Jason Ford, like, I mean, you'd feel sorry for Jason Ford because, I don't know, dude, all the good games that he plays well in, Tipperary seem to lose, and he doesn't get that same adulation maybe as Shamie Flanagan or something, or Shamie Callanan or something like that. Like, 7 from play, I think all 7 were in the first half. How was he free all the time? You were at the match, so, like, I mean, what was going on here? Like, was he was dropping off Hannon. Is it William O'Donoghue or Dara Donovan were falling asleep here?
They were, but you see, Tip, we go back to then. Oh, Tip wanted more. Tip were working harder. They were winning the ball in their back line. Limerick had to follow them down because they were able to come out with such ease. And when they did, Tip were managing to get away the passes. The tackles weren't dispossessed in the Tip men. Then it ended up, Declan Hannan's never going to follow his man out. That's not his game. That's not his job. So he was sitting back, and Jason Ford was having 30 or 40 yards of space. And Jason Ford, like, his wrists are ridiculous, absolutely unbelievable, and he's not really going to miss too many. Like, he might miss one free one, that's it, but he was free for nearly every ball and barely needs a swing. But great play. I think he's getting better and better every year. He's getting fitter and fitter every year, and look, at least, you know, going forward, Tipperary have him as a talisman no matter what happens with other players. But yeah, great player. But look, you saw the second half, if you're talking about structural, they imposed themselves on Tip, were able to hold their structure because of that, and therefore swashed up all the space that was in the Tip forward line. So, you know, he didn't get room in the second half to move, and, you know, I suppose that was it. You know, he didn't get a munch ball after that.
Well, and did you notice, like, was O'Donoghue or was O'Donovan detailed to watch him a bit more, or was it just they had more possession and it didn't look? Because, like, I mean, would this not be identified as a big weakness for Limerick now? Like, I mean, Hannon has no interest in marking, and Tony Kelly took him to the cleaners a couple of years ago, you know, in that game in Thurles when he was at centre forward. He won't mark. Like, he's just not marking. He's watching. Surely to God, that's teams are looking up going, Christ, look what Jason Ford was able to do.
They definitely are, but you used to say that about a lot of teams, and it's a dangerous game to target somebody in intercounty hurling, and in any hurling actually, because a lot of things have to go right. It's too hard a game to be that intricate. I would have, my biggest criticism with Hannon in the first half would have been he was centre back, two high balls come in, and two men getting the ball nearly came from his channel. Like, if I'm that free centre back, I need to be the conscience of the back line, hold it off. And then he was letting Jason Ford go too far, so I don't think he was in the game at all. Yeah. And I do think he needs a lot of protection. And a lot of Limerick people mightn't like that. But he does need a lot of protection. But, you know, he's a great hurler then when he's on the ball. But that forward line in Limerick gives that protection in the way they tackle. And they did the second half. They didn't let Tip lads out with it. And then Tip got that little bit of nervousness in their puck outs. They weren't able to find their man, and then he could just sit where he wanted because Tip weren't able to find their half forward line, find their midfield. And after that, he'd be fine when dead. He'd play brilliant after that, and that's what happened to me.
Yeah. So Declan Hannon had a very, very bad game yesterday. Sometimes when, like, I mean, you know, he plays well, you'd say he plays well, but, like, he's dropping off Ford. At what point does Declan Hannon, being the experienced centre back, or John Kiley or Canerc, say, push up on him there for 5 minutes because he's doing too much damage. You know, they never tried to engage Ford at all. Like, maybe there is a lesson. I know you can't target too much, or, but like, I mean, if I was the opposition manager, I'd say he won't mark. Stay 10 yards midfield side of him, and I want anyone who gets the ball to be looking up. He's free. Play through him. Yeah. Play through him all the time. I would say that's, you know, an obvious thing to do against Limerick.
It definitely is, but the trick of that works, but the trick is you have to win the battle first. You have to have them at sixes and sevens trying to come and tackle your backs and your midfielders, and you have to be breaking the tackles, handing it on for those holes to appear. If you're not breaking out through the Limerick attack, which is really, really the trick of it all, then you'll never get the opportunity. There'll never be those holes opened up. And if you talk about Declan Hannan having a good game, right, it's not, like, when I look at it, the Limerick management are not thinking of him. They're probably thinking the system didn't work. That's what is in their head. Because Declan Hannan, probably to him, was doing his job, and to Limerick management, they want him sitting there on the 40-meter line. If he has to go out in his man, they're probably saying that's a bad indictment of the team and the work rate within the team, I would say. Right. And I don't think it's in their language to say, you step up and you'll solve that. Because if he does step up, you'll probably have Shamie Callanan or whoever is inside doing a lot more damage after that.
Right, maybe that's it, yeah. But like, I mean, Jesus, if it was up to me, I would say Hannan had a bit of a nightmare last night. Cathal Malone, Jackie Tyrrell was tweeting during this game. He said he's the most improved hurler in Ireland. Like, and I have to say, I always put Cathal Malone down as a winter hurler, a bit of a kind of a plough horse rather than a race horse. And, you know, a very hot day in Turles would not be a day I would be identifying, you know, him to play brilliantly. What I loved about his goal, Paddy, is you see a lot of players throwing their hands up there and looking back at the ref looking for the free. He just bullied. He had no interest. He was being fouled badly, but he had no interest in stopping. He was just running through the player and he took the net out of it.
Yeah, I'd say he doesn't get up there too often.
I know, it's his only chance
for a goal. Brilliant finish. And do you know what? It was instinctive. And that's often the best, you know, yourself in any sport when you're going for a goal. When you didn't have time, you just threw it up, lashed it and straight in the top corner. So it was a great score. But Colin Malone is, you know, a really good player. He's probably, by liking him to another player, a bit like Dan McCormack, in that the shooting can be a little bit off, like we've seen it. After that, he scored 1-1, and after that, he probably hit three or four poorish wides, and that's what you will get out of him. But he'll keep a team honest. He's always there doing the dirty work. He's always ball winning or tackling or hooking. And, like, you know, it's probably like a number seven in rugby, where the likes of me and you mightn't see what they're doing, but, you know, somebody who's into the rugby would see all the tackles and the turnovers. That's what I think you see out of Cathal Malone. And very powerful runner as well. If you get him in a straight line, he's very good. But probably the key is that he needs to pop it off to Tony Kelly instead of shooting himself.
Yeah, maybe it is. Like, I mean, I'm going to brag about this as well. I told you Wexford are going to have a hangover from the disappointment of the Kilkenny game. They weren't at the pitch of it at all, were they? And then they came back.
It was terrible to look at, really. Obviously, I've never managed an intercounty, so it's like maybe somebody could point it at you that you haven't a clue the intricacies. But, I mean, out of Rory O'Connor, Lee Chin and Conor McDonald, surely at all stages of the game, one of them is going to be in there. Like, how is even Paul Morris is by trade an inside forward, and you have none of them inside for 40 minutes. Like, it's easy to read your tactics then. Everybody's out the field. Let's put pressure on them out the field.
Yeah.
Clare only needed to have their one sweeper inside, nothing to hit it into. So I'm wondering, where did that come out? Was it a tactic gone wrong? Was it a tactic that we're supposed to do? Or were players just not believing in where they were told to go on the field? Either way, it's concerning. And you'd say Wexford, you know, the way they're playing, like, that's probably the end of the road, really, isn't it?
Yeah, they showed a lot of heart, I suppose, to come back. They got 8 in a row to get right back into the game, but Clare were able to push it back out. I'd say that is the end of Davy in Wexford. I think, like, I mean, he's probably brought them as far, you know, as he can bring them. And like you say, you have Lee Chin, you have Conor McDonald, you have Morris, you have O'Connor, who looks an exceptional, exceptional player. You'd like to see another manager see, can he get a bit more, you know, maybe out of them?
Yeah, and I do think Davy has had a couple of really, really good years. And
yeah,
like, before Davy came in, Wexford were one of the teams where they might cause somebody a bit of trouble, but they weren't really beating anybody, I thought. Okay, they bit clear, I think, once in a qualifier, but it was awfully maybe the big game that they'd have. So I think he did bring a lot of steel and a lot more expectation. He won the Leinster final with him. But now I think it's come to a stage where they have a higher expectations again. They have some really good players, attacking players, and maybe a different style, because I think mentally Davy's style is very, very hard to keep up for more than a few years. It's run. If you're thinking of somebody in football, maybe Jimmy McGuinness is something similar, where you just have to be so mentally strong to keep running and running and running without ever being able to tear a team apart because you don't have enough firepower up the field.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Like, I mean, we'll see what happens. Yeah, I'd imagine that's probably the end of him in Wexford. But it has to be said, like, I mean, he did bring them on. But you're right. If to get them on to another level now, maybe they need a sprinkling of something else. James Maher. Geez, like, I mean, at halftime, you'd say James Maher could be under pressure to stay on the field. Never mind being for performance at the weekend. What a great turnaround he had. Like, I mean, Sutcliffe started so well and he looked lively and he was the leader and he was on loads of ball, throwing an owl, you know, onto to hurl, pretending to shoot and all these kinds of things. James Maher comes
over
out in the second
head.
Over the head, scores 3 points in the second half, and you'd say, Jesus, fair play to you. Like, that takes a lot of mental strength to come out and do that to Danny Sutcliffe.
Exactly, because if it was a normal Joe Soap and he got the few scores off you, you'd say, hey, come on now. You'd look at yourself in the mirror inside the jacks and say, come on, you're better than that, or you can get stuck into this now. But Danny Sutcliffe is proven. He's proven skill, fitness, and to have the mental metal to go at a Leinster final and a Kilkenny team. So James Maher, to be fair to him, is probably after copper fastening himself into the Kilkenny team, because hurling aside, I'm sure Brian Cody looked at that and said, that's the sort of fella I want, who everybody thinks he's bet. I think he's nearly bet, and he comes up and he really doubles down. And even that ball he flicked off to Hurley, that took a lot, because Sutcliffe is a better athlete than James Maher, but he kept going and kept going. Last second got back and got that flick. And, you know, I think a real symbol of what the Kilkenny team has been this year so far. But what a performance, and a couple of unbelievable scores. And as Jackie Tyrrell said, he is a natural half forward. But as I always say, it's probably easier to be a back than a forward. So I think a lot of good forwards or average forwards could be very good backs.
But here's the thing, like, I mean, that's the kind of half-back display you usually see a lot of credit for, long-range scores. And now you have Kyle Hayes showing another side to a wing back, as in going with it the whole time, you know, and carrying it with the pace. Do you think Michael Carey, like, I mean, he showed fierce turn of pace. Do you think Conor Brown's obviously, he's not going to be back for the next game. He went down with a bad hamstring injury. Think he can come in here and say, whenever you get it, you know, run at them, go at them, give a pass, go again. You know, like, we know Wexford do that a little bit. Like, you don't want all your defenders trying to do it like Wexford. That's a bit too intricate. But no harm letting your number seven say, here, look, that's your kind of your unique selling point. Let's get in on that a little bit.
I don't think it's something to be ruled out at all. I think looking at the next game, they'll eye up whoever they're playing first, and then they'll say, as a defender, is Michael Carey, you know, the right fit?
Right.
If he is, if they think he's able for him, then they might say, yeah, let's go with him, let's get him pushing up the field. Conor Brown's an absolutely huge loss.
Yeah.
But with Michael Carey, you're probably going pretty light for light there, you know, in terms of speedy, strong, good hurler. The other thing they might do is they might bring Killian Buckley into the starting lineup. But again, I think it's better him coming on as sub. He's full of energy. You know, he's a lot of mileage on the clock at this stage. Him coming on as sub might be the play. But Michael Carey, it depends. We saw him for 10 minutes or whatever it was. Oh, sorry, 35 minutes or 40 minutes the other day, performed fine. But I suppose, look, you're talking about an All-Ireland semi-final next. You're talking about big, big, big-time games. So it'd be interesting to see. But they do like it with Pádraig Walsh already. We see Pádraig Walsh gets the ball and goes with it. We also see Paddy Deegan does it to great effect as well. So it could be something that Kilkenny management look into. Right?
Yeah, the wing backs. I'm thinking of Caelum Lyons. He goes with it a lot. He shoots a lot as well. I think Kyle Hayes is nearly out on his own, that he never takes a long-range shot. He always either goes with it or gives a pass hoping to get the return. Has a wing back like that ever been seen in hurling before?
I'm trying to think of it now. I'd love to hear it. Maybe Jerry McInerney back in the day, but again, he was going for pints and off.
A lot of long range pints.
A lot of pints, but I'm just trying to rack my brains. I can't think of anyone that's done. And who's come up and consistently every match? It's nearly every match he gets inside the 21 for a goal.
Yeah.
And even the All-Ireland last year, the whole thing. I don't know. I mean, it is a whole new ball game, really, but it's certainly a tactic like that they're saying now. Like, you can see him overloading one side of the field and trying to get it over to Hayes, and it is a tactic, but it is fairly awesome, you know.
Caelum Lyons is probably the closest to that, as in he might go, some man to take a long range shot himself, but like, he does run at the odd time. He kind of mixes it up. Hugh Lawler is another nomination here. He's tied that down. I remember there was a debate around the fullback spot. Like, I mean, there's no debate now. He's a rangy, great man in the air, wholehearted. Himself, Deegan Walsh. Like, the back line is looking very, very good for Kilkenny. Like, I mean, they might need a little bit, I don't know, a little bit more out of forwards. Am I being a little bit harsh on them?
I'd say maybe around the midfield. They'd be, you know, Richie Leahy is in and out of the team. Richie Reid is in and out of the team. So, yeah. And they're the ones that play midfield. I know Mullen was down there to start, but they're probably the ones that that's haven't set the world alight.
It's not an All-Ireland win in midfield, is it? Leahy and Richie Reid.
Like, it's not typically one. No, I will say, I think they have a little, they have a little trio there going well again. They have Adrian Mullen. Obviously, TJ and Owen Cody going well. All Ballyhale, of course. Yeah.
Cody wasn't great, was he?
I thought he was good. I thought he was winning ball. I thought he was causing them serious, serious trouble. Maybe didn't have the finishes that he had some other days, but like, he was setting the play. He's good in the air. You can hit any type of ball to him. I was impressed enough with him now, and I think they worked really well together, flicking balls to each other. And certainly to have it in the forward line. The midfield, I think, is their only area where they'd be a little bit concerned. Just that they're not owning the game there. Like, Richie Reid is taken off a lot of the time. He hurts very well for Ballyhale, but this is a different step up again. And just not doing it. Richie Leahy, number 23, because he was on the bench not to start. He was starting, and he's on and he's off for the last 3 or 4 years. So they're going to have to see improvement in that. And I think Cody will just go to whoever is going well in training the next day will get on. But that's the only place I see weakness. Look, Hugh Lawler to me has been very good the last few years, but that was his real moment where he came out and showed to be top class and catching balls and driving out with it. And his fundamentals are excellent. He'll stay close to his man. You're not going to catch too many balls in the air off him. He's teeth tough, and he's only getting better and better.
Yeah, and Paddy Deegan, I suppose, putting him back in the corner, a lot of people might have been questioning that at the time. But, like, I mean, seems to be very, very comfortable there, doesn't he? Like, I mean, and Pádraig Walsh at centre-back, and he uses the ball very well, obviously, Deegan. He's a much better hurler, maybe, than he's given credit for.
He's a fantastic hurler. I suppose the only thing you say, he is quite left-sided, but he's so powerful and fast that he makes it work for himself. He's really tight. Like, to go from being a midfielder to a shutdown cornerback, which is what he is, he's shutting lads down, but he's coming forward. I think he's been impressive for a few years now, to be fair to him. And even through the lean few years when Kilkenny didn't look fantastic, he's been really, really good. He's very fit. If you talk about Limerick guys being fit, he seems like he could stay going all day. So I think he's played unbelievably back there and has brought something that they needed. But it just shows you do need great players out the field, and he could easily step in as a midfielder. But if you're not set in that full back line, then you'll always have your weaknesses.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know who to give it to between Kyle Hayes and Keane Lynch here. Obviously, we didn't mention Mitchell, Niall Mitchell from Westmeath, who scored 1-4. His goal, we mentioned, was absolutely outstanding. He scored a brilliant goal off his left-hand side over at the sideline. The one I liked was the real nonchalant one off his right-hand side, just from a tight angle. It's like he was turning around to give it back outside. It was like he was taking the piss almost a little bit. I don't want to say that disrespectfully, but he tapped it on his hurl and was looking around and then just nonchalantly kind of tapped it over on the right side. Do you know the one I'm on about? A lot of
Asher's
skill.
Asher's just expressing himself, I suppose. They are playing well, and that's what you do. But it's a great score as well. But I don't know, are you going to be picking this contender of the week?
I think it's like Kyle Hayes is a complete freak of a number seven, and he's going to change number seven. And then Keane Lynch gave the most leadership, you know, manly performance you'd ever see. So I don't know. Do we give a joint one? I can't decide. I'll let you decide there. You're the tip man. You can decide who pissed you off more.
Pissed me off more. Keane Lynch, because he was on my club, mate. So maybe you'll give it to him.
As for pissing off Dan McCormack, Keane Lynch gets the performance of the weekend. So congratulations to him. A brilliant performance. Right. Great stuff, Paddy. We'll be back on Thursday, All-Ireland quarterfinals and the relegation match between Laois and Westmeath. So the message to Westmeath from Laois is enjoy your Joe McDonagh, go on the beer for the whole week, and really, 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 really fill that cup. Fill it several times outside in the beer gardens. Right, we'll leave it there. We'll be back on Thursday. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
No such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
You do.
No, we don't.
A donkey in Eden, a donkey in a palace. There's nothing else to eat.
He was massive. Legs, ass, spit. But I burst out laughing watching him.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.